Welcome to the family on the Tom Bernard Podcast with
Doug Sprinthal,
Mike Kelsan,
Andy Brant Bernard,
and Mike Bryant.
God, we're just surrounded by talent today. It's unbelievable.
The testosterone in this room, you can smell it in the hallway.
Testosterone. Coming up, Mark Lynette and Alan Boyd are going to talk to us about Sounds of Summer, the very best of the Beach Boys. It was released on June 17th. Currently number 31 on the Billboard charts. That's very impressive, I would think. To kick off the year-long celebration, provide the perfect summer soundtrack, Capitol Records will release a newly remastered expanded edition of the Beach Boys' career-spanning greatest hits collection. Capitol Records, baby, the old hometown. Mm. Working at Capitol Records.
Beach Boys are surging right now.
Well, they should be.
Yeah, I mean, it's people are rediscovering them, and a lot of people, younger people, are just discovering them.
No, it's good. We'll take a break. Be right back, right after this.
Who wants to start?
I don't want to talk to Sprinthal. Do I have to talk to you?
You don't have to. You could quit this show like the other one, you big
you mean
baby.
I could retire from it?
Retire. I'm retiring from my own podcast.
I honest to God told him, don't use the word retiring. So they used it not once, but twice.
Right.
So, well, Jesus, whatever.
They are radio people. They're not paid to listen.
Or that. Well, are you saying they're dim?
I'm not saying that. I'm going to. Anyway, announcement. Announcement, Walser Automotive Group, all operations are closed to celebrate the 4th of July. You can always shop online. All your vehicles are available for viewing pleasure there, but every store, and this includes our body and collision shops, are closed on Monday, the 4th of July. So happy 4th of July to all Walser employees listening, and to all the customers listening, thank you for your continued patronage. I don't know what we're going to do without doing Walser commercials after December 23rd. I'm just going to have to sit in the corner and cry. I'll feel like Mike Gelfand.
Won't you be doing this show still?
I suppose.
Well, that was an ad. That was an ad hominem attack.
Yeah, it really was, wasn't it? I'm devastated, Mike.
Oh man, you know.
You can understand.
Walser Automotive Group. Walser.com.
Yeah, it's vicious.
You're up. What's up next? Are we doing a Michael Bryant show? Oh, Walser.com. And now, Michael Bryant, Bradshaw, and Bryant.
So, let's see. We can talk about people on their cell phones. We can talk about people speeding because the weather's good and they think that the roads are clear, so they go speeding along. Also a reminder that sometimes when things happen, you should talk to your lawyer and get some advice on things versus doing it on your own.
Like what?
Bad things could happen, such as, you know, putting things in releases that you don't want.
I thought if I told them they'd understand, but apparently they don't get that part.
Yeah, but the process doesn't always work that way.
Did anybody hear my salute to the morning show this morning when I left?
I actually listened to your announcement at 9. My meeting started a little late. I thought it was great.
So did I go out of my way to try to make anybody look bad?
You said Dan Culhane was the biggest prick you ever
had. Yeah, I forgot that. No, it was Dave Huffman. That's what it was.
Dave Huffman.
No, I did.
Glad they're dead.
That was real nice.
I thought
Doug.
That was mean.
You
crossed the line when you said that, I thought.
What are you, the assistant GM now? Jesus. All I said was that Dave Huffman, and particularly Dan Culhane, because Dan and I worked together for so long, two of the nicest guys you'd ever want to meet. Terrific people.
I had honestly forgotten about Huffman until you mentioned him. He was great on the morning show.
A car accident on the way to a Notre Dame football game.
Great guy.
Great guy.
Yeah, he really was.
And Culhane, too.
You know my Culhane story?
No.
Well, so.
Should we do this after the break?
Yeah, we can do it after.
We should probably do it after.
And the commercial at some point. It's not a Walser commercial.
I forgot all about that. I'm sorry.
Bradshaw and Bryant.
Yeah, there you go. Is that everything?
If that counts as an after you, then.
God.
It is true. The cops are all over the place in the highways now. They're pulling people over left and right.
Are they really?
It's tax collection time.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, that's true, isn't it?
Well, it's a holiday, you know, holidays a week, I guess, and they, you know, they come out in force, yeah.
Are we just in it, Andy? Do we have to segue or anything?
We've got one more.
If you're in Rhode Island, if you're pulled over in those types of circumstances and you pay at the scene, they all go away.
Yeah, and
now,
imagine they do.
Now the end of the spot break with one more conversion. Yep. Oh, God, we're never going to get there.
Hey, this is Brian Zepp. Summer is finally here, and if you're like me, you've got some serious riding planned. Make sure you and your motorcycle are good to go with Dennis Kirk. Whatever you ride, Harley, Indian, metric cruiser, or sport bike, you'll find what you need at Dennis Kirk. 160,000 parts and accessories in stock. Clothing and helmets, too. Order before 8 p.m., and they ship the same day. Plus, shipping is free for orders over $89. Follow Zepp's lead and head to DennisKirk.com. They ship today.
We are back, ladies and gentlemen. Just very quickly, I need to mention, I got several calls from the national media, like All Access and all the, you know, the people in the business and all that stuff. Every one of them said, why does it say you're retiring from KQ? I said, I don't know. I'm leaving. I'm not retiring. But would I be retiring from KQ, Mike?
Well, I don't believe
technically,
so.
Technically, you're not retiring. You're retiring from that job.
He's leaving KQ.
I'm leaving. I'm not retiring.
Yep.
So
no,
shut it.
No, you know what you're
it's
supposed to.
Not like you're writing the Declaration of Independence here either. We could probably just
leave me alone.
Deal with it.
Get away from me.
What you're supposed to say is that you're leaving for an exciting new journey.
Mm-hmm. That's what I did
a
say.
New opportunity.
Yeah.
I said, no, actually what I said was, if I stay much longer, I'll have to slit. No, I don't. No, it's 36 years, 37 years. It's actually, I'm in my 37th year. 36 years happened on April 16th, so I'm in my 37th year. And I just said how lucky I was. Who the hell knew when I got a call from Dave Hamilton sitting in New York in our apartment saying, hey, you want to come do the KQ Morning Show? Because Andy, Catherine had gotten pregnant and Andy was coming, and we couldn't raise Andy at 20th Street and 2nd Avenue. Mm-hmm. So I literally hung up the phone, and the second it hit the cradle there, the old desk phones, it rang, and it was Hamilton. He goes, you want to come back and do the morning show at KQ? And I said, sure.
So we have Alan and Mark.
Oh, we do.
Yes,
wonderful.
We do.
Ladies, speaking of that, by the way, before we were living in New York, I was working at Capitol Records, and one of the most fun things about working there was talking to Brian Wilson and the Beach Boys, Mark Lynette and Alan Boyd. How you doing, Mark and Alan?
Great. Oh, we're doing fine.
Magnificent. Yeah, I worked at Capitol Records. From what was it, 1977 to, I can't remember, 77 to like 83. I think it was 87. Well, did you guys know the old people at Capitol Records? Did you ever know Bruce Wendell, people like that? Did you ever meet him?
No, I think that's before my time. I was around there, starting in the mid 80s.
Oh, so right, yeah. Oh, you took my job. Way to go, thanks.
Yeah, no. around there. I've never been a Capitol employee.
Oh, I see.
I'm the new kid on the block. I kind of wandered in the mid-90s.
So that's new kid on the block. You're absolutely right. We were just talking about Mike Gelfand is at the table here, and he's pointing out that the Beach Boys have made this wonderful resurgence. I've always been it's kind of weird. I didn't have my own room. I never owned a car. I couldn't afford any of the stuff they did, but I loved the Beach Boys. I was not headed to the ocean on my surfboard, but I did. I think the one that got me finally, because I grew up in the inner city, was the song I Get Around. I think it was like, well, at least that's a little city-like, right?
Well, actually, I think the story goes that the first hit, Surf and Safari, broke out in Phoenix.
Well, there you go.
A lot of surfing in Phoenix.
Oh, yeah, they surf all the time in Phoenix. There's no question about it. So I want to hear about Sounds of Summer. The very best of the Beach Boys have been released on June 17th. It's currently number 31 on the Billboard charts. I want to hear all about it. And I'm not kidding you guys, Mark and Alan. I love dealing with the Beach Boys, whether it's Mike Love or Brian Wilson. I just talked to Brian a couple of years. I suppose it's a few years ago now. But they're very, very nice. Every one of them is just a hell of a nice person.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Mike Love, especially, is great fun to work with on these things.
Oh, I bet. Yeah. Whenever I interview him, he's always got some smart-ass comment, which I really like about Mike Love. I do enjoy that, no doubt.
Well, the best thing is if he throws you a zinger, if you can throw him one back, you're in. Yeah,
that's exactly right. Let's go to who's the bigger smart ass. I do like that a lot. How did this all come together, Mark and Alan?
Well, the 2003 first edition of Sounds of Summer, when it was just one disc, kind of surprised everybody. I mean, the thing went on to go Mark, did that go four times platinum?
Yeah, they thought at the time that it might sell 500,000 copies, and it's gone on to sell close to 4.5 million at this point. So yes, a big surprise, which seems to be one of the common threads in the Beach Boys history, that the public is more anxious for something than everybody expects. It's amazing.
And now we're kind of wrapping up to celebrate the 60th anniversary, you know, the founding of the group, and, you know, the powers that be and management and everyone said, let's expand this greatest hits thing. And a big part of that was we kind of wanted to put a spotlight on other types of music that the group recorded over the years, because they were, you know, far more than just the early, you know, Fun in the Sun and, you know, Beach School stuff.
Yeah, no question about it. It was such an interesting band because it was pretty much a family band. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Murray was not that easy to get along with for anybody. But, you know, that's kind of how that went. But I do remember covering the shows when I worked at Capitol. I'd go see them and go backstage and talk and have a nice time. But when Brian came out on stage, four bodyguards, each holding a corner of a blanket, or two blankets, I guess, he came walking out of the dressing room onto the stage, and you could not see him because you couldn't talk to him because you couldn't see him. They went all the way up on stage, and then once he sat down, they took the curtains away so you could see it was him. He just did not want to talk to anybody on the way to the stage, which I suppose if he's focused, I understand that.
Well, Brian's very shy. You know, sometimes, you know, going out on stage in front of tens of thousands of people could be pretty scary.
So. Yeah, well, I think that's exactly right, and I think that maybe, I don't know if it was his idea or whose idea it was, but he did like that, and it worked really, really well. And the funny thing about it is that they're leading him out, they take him out of the dressing room, and they're going through the hall to go to the stage. I could not see him, but I just said, okay, where do you want me to go? And he goes, hi, Tom. I couldn't see him, and he couldn't see me, but he heard my voice, so he said, hi, Tom. I'm like, whoa, that's weird.
Right.
that sounds like Brian.
That's Brian. That's definitely Brian all the way.
Well, it's amazing that after years and years of not being comfortable touring, you know, starting around 1999, 2000, he has been touring consistently ever since. He's out now on a long summer tour at the age of 80, along with Beach Boy Al Jardine and Blondie Chaplin, who was in the band 72-73. And it really turned, you know, something that really turned around for Brian. He really loves being out in front of people now.
Yeah, see that boy, I did not see that coming. I will tell you that. I had
nobody did.
Yeah?
No.
Do you think psychology's gotten that much better that they can sit down and go, Brian, this is not that big a deal? I mean, do they know how to approach these things better and get somebody?
I'm certain of that. Yeah. I mean, they know so much now that they had no clue about back in the 60s and the 70s, you know, when Brian was first dealing with a lot of this stuff.
You know, it's so funny looking back, Mark and Alan, because basically when I was 12 years old, 11, 12, whenever they broke, I think it was 11 when the Beatles broke, and then a year later with the Beach Boys, but it was like, okay, so I'm living in the ghetto in Minneapolis, so I got a British band called the Beatles and another band that's surfing up a storm in California. That's who I get to follow on the radio. I thought that was interesting because I had nothing in common with any of them, but I loved their music. Their music was fantastic.
Well, it's for me, when I was a little kid, I was 5 years old, and I became a nut Beach Boys fan. I mean, I was so moved by the harmonies on songs like, you know, In My Room, and my mom, when I was 5, got me the Pet Sounds album. And she probably, you know, she saw this cover, this Pet Sounds, and this happy picture of these guys feeding goats at a petting zoo. She must have thought it was a kid's record.
I bet she did, yeah.
But it was so comforting and so soothing, and even if I didn't know what the words meant, that music really resonated with me. And I became a nut fan. I think I was probably the only 8-year-old on my block who got the Sunflower album the day it came out. But I was always fascinated with how they put that music together. You know, what made it tick? What did they do? And, you know, I found myself in the group's orbit. I made some documentaries about them back in the 90s and then got into this amazing project with Mark where we went through and preserved and cataloged every tape in the Boys archive. Just amazing the depth of the material, and especially material that no one had ever heard. And we even put a couple of the best unreleased songs we ever found on this new Sounds of Summer project.
You know, I think it's fantastic. You know, one of my favorite Beach Boy songs of all time, and I don't know that it was ever... It got radio play, but I don't think... Maybe it was a hit, but I don't know. A song called Wild Honey. I loved that song, and it was just... It was never a hit, I don't think, was it?
Yeah, oh, yeah. It was a top 40 hit.
Oh, was it? Oh, good.
Yeah, the original Sounds of Summer is all their top 40 hits. And, you know, they had a lot of records that were... very popular on FM radio in the 70s, but because of the way the charts changed, they weren't reflected in that. They didn't get on the original release. So that's one of the things that we've done with this new release is all the other important records in their career are now available on this 3-CD set.
Why do you think it is that so many people in America, from New York City all the way to Los Angeles, why did so many people enjoy surf music and California Dreamin' and all, you know, all those things? Why do you think that the entire country kind of went, oh, this is very, very good? We had nothing in common with the Beach Boys, but we loved them.
It's easy.
Yeah, I grew up in New York, and I've always felt in retrospect that the Beach Boys, especially the Beach Boys, but other acts like Jan and Dean, should get an award from the California Chamber of Commerce for making California so popular. I mean, I grew up on the East Coast. There certainly, I guess, maybe there was surfing. I don't know, but appealed to me, and everything about California. And there's more, of course. I mean, the beach movies and the TV shows and all that. It just seemed like to a 12 to 16 year old, like a very appealing lifestyle, and the music just went along with it. And of course, we were all skateboarding.
Yeah.
As a result of that,
that's very
God true. Only knows how many millions of people came to California because they were attracted to that kind of joyous lifestyle excitement that the songs communicated.
Yeah, true.
Kind of amazing.
Dougie, you got a take on
that? I was going to say the answer simple. Girls in bikinis. Beach Boys are really just the soundtrack for the decade long ad for great looking bikinis.
Well, that's probably true.
I think I'd go November to April.
November to April.
That's right.
You look outside.
You're sitting in 3 feet of snow or shoveling out your driveway, and here's Annette and Frankie on the beach. Take your pick.
No, that is true. All those beach movies and all that stuff. Yeah, I tend to forget about that whole thing, even though I enjoyed some of them. I wasn't a big beach movie guy, but you're right. It was the music and it was the movies, and then we started talking about this, that. Yeah, you're right. It kind of all blew up in the mid-60s, didn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, it was a lifestyle thing. And, I mean, the same is true of other places. I mean... of New York and London, but being in New York and like a native, never going to the Statue of Liberty or the Empire State Building or anything. I mean, just California was just a sun-kissed, not the brand, but other world that to a teenager just seemed so appealing. And for me, as a wannabe recording engineer, the music of the sound of those records was also just so appealing. And the interesting thing about the Beach Boys to me, in retrospect, is that they not only managed, I mean, they were a hit before the Beatles and the British Invasion appeared over here.
That's true.
Starting in 62, but they still, and unlike a lot of their contemporaries, they still managed to have huge hits in the midst of Beatlemania, I Get Around and Help Me Rhonda. And unlike pretty much anybody else that was around at that in that era, they didn't fade away. They came back in the 70s bigger than ever, and they remain a huge musical force both historically and contemporarily, even today, which I think is pretty pretty unique in the annals of music.
No question. You know, Mike and Al and several other people in the band, when I would talk to them about this, that, or the other, and I asked them what it was all about, and they said, and they all agreed, that Brian hears things that we don't hear. Would you agree with that?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I engineered a number of his solo records, and I was always impressed when we were going to do vocals. And Brian was going to do all the background parts, and he would sing them and stack them up repeatedly, and it was about the same as if you already had them recorded and were just pushing playback on a tape recorder, because he would do a part, double it, triple it, quadruple it, without any effort, without having to hear the first part, and then he would add the next part and the next part and the next part, and maybe one out of 50 times he would get the he would get the repeated part wrong. It's just amazing how how he heard these things and could vocalize them. I've worked with a lot of people in the studio, and that's not something you see. I've never seen it before or since.
It's an amazing thing going back and listening to those session tapes. Mark put together this great compilation just before I joined up, the Pet Sound Sessions.
Oh yeah.
And all those session tapes survive. And to hear Brian working with those Wrecking Crew musicians, and even sometimes with the other Beach Boys, it's just amazing how on top of it he is. He hears everything. He'll hear the drummer do something a little bit different and stop and say, Oh, wait, that's great. Do that again. You know, and like I said, I've never heard anybody who could spontaneously come up with such rich, deep arrangements like that guy could.
I think it's a rare quality that musicians, and Brian Wilson is one of them, that he heard everything in his head before it was even recorded. You know, it was like Beethoven writing the Ninth Symphony when he was deaf, or Steely Dan had that ability too, but that's so rare with musicians. And I've done some studio work too, and a lot of it's horrible because they're kind of trying to invent stuff on the spot, and it doesn't often work. But a guy like Brian Wilson, it's just, like you said, you pretty much just have to print it, right?
Yeah.
Well, you listen to the sessions, and what always amazed me is, unlike most sessions you hear from that period, when they started rolling tape, the song is pretty much together. With Brian, and you can hear this on the Pet Sound Sessions box very clearly, it really evolves in the 3 or 4 hours it took to create the final track. I mean, if you listen to the section For God Only Knows, which incredibly started at about 11 o'clock at night and ran till 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, it's very rough. And that whole middle section is something that Don Randy, one of the keyboard players, suggested, the staccato. And the amazing thing with Brian is that if he heard something or suggested something and heard it, and he immediately knew whether it was the right thing or the wrong thing, and it stayed in, or he would find it. I mean, generally speaking, my experience with making records is that it gets very convoluted and very granular. And in Brian's case, he was just so laser focused and knew what he wanted. Something I always point out is that Brian's recording, he always knew after that process. I mean, you've got 20 guys in the studio, and there's no, you can't go back later and say, well, we'll fix the bass or the guitar or whatever like you can today. And he would work towards the finished track. And when he had it, that was it. It wasn't like, well, let's cut it 3 or 4 more times and see if we can do it better. It's always, all right, thank you, we got it, good night, which is, and that's, I mean, that's what happens with God Only Knows and Wouldn't It Be Nice and everything. I can only, in my mind, think of one instance where I can recall a master being not the last take, but the second to last take for some reason. And that's very, very, very uncommon in recorded music.
Yeah, most people don't know when to stop.
Yeah,
it's really hard. You get so, you get so inside that you start, most people start to doubt, their ears, their mind, whatever, because you're focusing on it so hard. And Brian just had this incredible ability to know when it was right. I mean, the other one that always impressed me was the very first session for Good Vibrations, and that organ sound you hear You can hear it. I don't know if it's on the Pet Sounds, one of the boxes. Anyway, I don't know who's playing organ, Larry Knechtel or somebody. And Brian goes, another stop, please. And Knechtel changes the stop on the Hammond organ, and it's that sound. And Brian goes, okay, great, that's it. And it does, and that's it for the session. I mean, that quickly. Brian decided that was the sound he wanted and needed.
God, that's so wonderful. You guys are bringing back so many memories to me of different things, and I do want to hear it. And Doug, you're doing a great job jumping in there. But it just popped in my head that when I left Capitol in 82 or 83, I can't remember which year it was. Say it's 83, right? So I left in 83, and about 22 years later, I interviewed Mike Love because I do a morning show in town. I've been doing it for like 36 years now, 37 years. But it was funny. After like 22, 23, 24 years, we have Mike Love on the show, and the interview starts like this. Hey, Tom, how you doing? Don't you owe me $20? Oh, okay. A quarter century ago, so I guess it's probably up to about, what, $60 now with interest.
Okay.
But they were just good guys. They were just, they were your pals, and they were just nice guys. Not one problem that I ever have with the Beach Boys. Never a problem. Mm-hmm.
Well, they're for the most part pretty down to earth.
Yep.
And
yeah, they are.
It's just hard to imagine though, being so famous so young.
Oh yeah.
And then all these years later, that's their identity, that's their life, that's what they know, having been Beach Boys all this time.
No question. No. Mm-hmm. Did their father have something to do with that, do you think? I mean, he did.
Well, of course. I mean, he really, paved the way and, busted open a lot of doors for them. He was pretty aggressive on behalf of his kids.
That he supported it at all. I mean, I don't know about you, but in my family, nobody thought that this show business life was, something worth pursuing.
Right.
Clearly, he saw the talent. I mean, he was a musician and songwriter, so that helped. But clearly, he saw the talent and fostered it early on. I mean, he set up the music room and bought a tape recorder, and I think there was a real drive, to help them succeed.
I gotta ask.
I mean, I think a good 10 years before the Beach Boys even started, I think he'd actually gotten the song placed and played on the Lawrence Welk show.
Oh, really?
It was kind of a big deal for the family, that's for sure.
No, we gotta tell people who Lawrence Welk is because I asked the other day, and I'm not kidding. I asked a bunch of young people, they're probably 25 to 30 years old, about Rodney Dangerfield. They said, "Who?" Had no idea who Rodney Dangerfield was.
Oh, he gets no respect.
No respect at all,
Look at it. You can get it all on YouTube. I would recommend, as far as Lawrence Welk, look up Lawrence Welk, Jack Benny. Lawrence Welk appearing on the Jack Benny show.
Oh, sure.
Which is good in and of itself, but also if you know who Lawrence Welk is, making fun of his own image.
Lawrence.
But I got to say, though, the Beach Boys, even though, because I go and lecture sometimes at universities, they may not know anybody, prior to 1990, but they know the Beach Boys and they know that music. It's really become part of everyone's consciousness almost. It's so pervasive. It's everywhere.
Tell them your Rory McIlroy story.
Yes.
Well, something that we've, as Alan said, we've really tried to do with this package and some of the other ones is to expose people to the other aspects of the Beach Boys, other parts of their career. And it's been interesting that it seems to have repeated what happened in the early 70s with the Surf's Up album, where they had gone through a period where people of my age that in 67 were listening to progressive bands like the Jefferson Airplane and Cream and Hendrix and all that, mm-hmm. and thought the Beach Boys were kind of, striped shirt, old hat. Suddenly they became a hip contemporary band again with the album Surf's Up. And what we're finding is as we reissue a lot of that material starting in 68 onward, that the today's audience, young and old, but especially young, seems to get it, seems to understand that there was more there than just fun, and Surfing USA. As Alan said, I mean, this is a band that in some ways has been so many different bands over the last 60 years.
That's very true.
Multiple divergent and at times mutually incompatible fan bases.
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, you got
that
right.
Once they achieved that hipness or whatever you want to call it with Surf's Up, they're out playing for a new, much younger audience that really, I mean, in some cases, to the Beach Boys' own chagrin, wants to hear the hits from the 60s. And if anything, as their popularity grew, they sometimes had a problem presenting their new material because the older songs were striking a nerve with a whole new generation of fans out there.
Yeah, no question. Oh, very quickly, Doug just brought something up. This is about the Beatles, not the Beach Boys, but about 4 years ago, they're doing an interview, interviews at the Open, the British Open, right? And Rory McIlroy's being interviewed, and the reporter asks him a question. Can you name one of the Beatles? Asked Rory McIlroy to name one of the Beatles, and he thought for about 30 seconds, and he said, George Lucas? No.
Okay.
No, that's
not everybody's a music fan.
But people don't know. I mean, literally, I was talking to a bunch of young people, and these people were in their 30s, had no idea who Christopher Walken is. Why don't we keep... Look, I know my grandmother's favorite music, my mother's favorite music. Mm-hmm. My mother was a huge Glenn Miller fan. But why don't young people now care what their parents used to listen to?
Well, so I'm sure some do. It's just, you know, I have a 29-year-old son, and you know, he knows some of the music, but music has never been the important in his life the way it was when I was growing up. When you had when I had an AM radio, and 10 channels on
that's true
on New York television. Yep. I mean, it was much more. You know, much more focused, so I suspect that the demographic was much wider. And of course, you know, my parents didn't like the music I liked. If anything,
sure,
they thought it was a bunch of noise. But they knew who the Beatles were. Everybody did, and maybe a few other people, the Beach Boys, maybe being one of them. But you know, you had much more of a generational divide. Whereas I think everybody below the age of, 30 had some connection to, popular music at that time. Whereas now there's a million other things you can be interested in thanks to the internet, the very thing we are broadcasting over at the moment.
Well,
the funny thing is my folks were pretty hip. You know, my dad played in local jazz combos and stuff.
Ooh.
And when I was 9, they actually took me to the Winterland to see the Beach Boys. And this was full on early 70s Surf's Up era. And my God, that was.
Smelled like skunk in there, did it?
I remember asking,
what's that funny smell?
No. Yeah. But we're sitting on the first row of the balcony. And it was a great show. I mean, they were playing really deep stuff like Surf's Up and things from their new album. But at the end, they just did this slam, bang, hit after hit after hit, and people were up jumping and stomping around so much that my mom was terrified that the balcony was going to give way.
Well, it doesn't make sense.
Mine would have been terrified to go to a show like that.
Yeah. So
that's pretty, I mean, I think that's, you're very lucky. My only experience would have been that I thought at the time that the people my grandparents' age, not my actual grandparents, because they were squarer than my parents, but people of that age that went through the jazz years were, and I met quite a few of them. They were much more likely to understand what was going on in the 60s. With that generation and their rebellion and their music and all that, even if they didn't like it, they understood it because they had gone through it. As you said, with Glenn Miller and you know, artists like that.
Stomping at the Savoy, you know.
Yeah, that's right. That's very true. We only have a couple of minutes left, so I want to get this, and this might make you hang up on me anyway, but what is what is auto-tune done to music? I most of the music, I cannot stand most of it. It's just so phony.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I like, you know, I work in contemporary music as well. I do a lot of live music broadcasts. And like everything else, I mean, modern recording, it's just a technology, and it can, I would say, it can be used for good or evil. And so on the one hand, it can and is overused as both a crutch, and of course, you know, people started using it as a sound in and of itself. On the other hand, what I have found is, take a live album. I mean, when I was making live albums in the 80s, when we're still working on tape, when you want, if you wanted to fix something, it was really, you know, difficult to fix one little piece. So you'd wind up re-recording a lot of live album, because that was the only way to get it right. Now, it's possible to keep, nearly 100% of what was performed, and just fix little pieces, either by moving a piece around, or in some cases in a vocal, you can tune one note or one line, so it actually winds up being more authentic than it would have been otherwise. Obviously the abuse is more obvious.
I think the only good thing about the abuse of autotune is it's replaced gated snare as the most hated sound in recorded history.
Yeah, Well, and the other thing, in some ways, I think worse than autotune is, most live performances now use at least some amount of playback, augment or to do things that you can't do live on stage. And that's great, except that it means the performance, every performance has to be, pretty much exactly the same, because you're playing to click, essentially. And it's hard to say, because there are less and less acts that don't do that. But the fact that you can't react to your audience the same way, you would have so many years ago in a performance is, I think that hurts as well.
Yeah. Mark and Alan, thank you so much for your time today. The Beach Boys, currently number 31 on the Billboard charts. I love that. Yeah, Sound of Summer.
Yeah, I mean, that surprised us when we saw it the other day.
All right, well, stay in touch, Mark and Alan. Appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
All right, nice to be here. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
We'll be right back right after this. Tom here, and I'm talking with Brad Huckle and Mike Bilski of North American Banking Company. We've talked before about how working with a community bank like North American Banking Company can benefit business owners. Do you have an example you could share with our listener?
Our customers at Homeco Insulation in Blaine have been banking with a big bank for many years, but suddenly their calls weren't getting returned and their banker was unresponsive to their business needs.
You can imagine their frustration. They had a successful business, wanted to expand, and their bank cut them off.
They were ready to move on from their big bank. When they referred to us, we knew they wanted to work with a community bank that would be responsive and would take the time to understand their business and its needs.
That sounds like a perfect fit. I know it can always reach out and not only talk to an actual person, but I'm talking to an experienced lender.
They've told us the same thing, Tommy.
Look, I know Brad and Mike, and I trust them with my banking. My whole family does. So why not bank with my banker, North American Banking Company, a better banking experience, member FDIC, and equal housing lender. Dan Chesky's here from Dan's Southside Marine. It won't be long now until we start seeing boats on the water.
Warmer temps and open water are coming soon, Tom. We have inventory in stock now from Alumacraft, Premier, Avalon, and Manitou, with more arriving daily.
What's the secret to finding a boat you're looking for this year, Dan?
My recommendation is to shop now, pick a model, put your name on it. Our team of pros at Dan's Southside Marine will have the knowledge and experience to get the boat you want equipped the way you want it equipped.
What about financing options?
Right now, we are offering low-interest financing options up to 144 months with qualified credit. Ask for details when you visit the store.
Alumacraft fishing boats, Premier, Avalon, and Manitou pontoons, all powered by Suzuki outboards, are in stock now with new boats arriving daily. Dan's Southside Marine is located just 6 blocks west of 35W on 98th Street in Bloomington, or shop online at dansouthsidemarine.com. You all have helped build MyPillow into the incredible company it is today and have trusted in Mike Lindell to give you a great night's sleep. Mike's latest incredible deal is on the Giza Dream Sheets, which you've heard me rave about before, that's for sure. These sheets are made from the world's best cotton, Giza. They are ultra soft and breathable, yet extremely durable. Right now, the Giza Dream Sheets at its lowest price ever. These sheets are 60% off, coming in as low as $39.99 with promo code TOM.
We are back, ladies and gentlemen. I was going to tell this to Mark and Ellen. I thought, maybe I won't tell this story, but there's video of it. You can find it if you want. But Lawrence Welk had a dancer, an African-American guy named Bobby. And Bobby would come out and he'd dance and do all this wonderful stuff. And he'd, you know, hell of a talented guy. And it, the end of the song, Lawrence comes out on national television, puts his arm around Bobby, and looks at the camera and says, and I quote, "For them, it's so easy."
I wonder if he's related to Wolf Blitzer.
Yeah, I wonder.
So poor and so black.
And so black. Yeah, that was what New Orleans was.
Yeah,
Katrina. It was New Orleans.
You know, my kids loved watching Lawrence Welk.
I did too.
They
I
thought it was
why.
The funniest thing they'd ever seen.
I couldn't stand it.
No. Oh, I agree with Mike. I thought it was hilarious. I was like, really?
Yeah, but you know, you can see all the humor you want to in about 5 minutes, yeah. And then you know, you've seen everything. But they thought it was hilarious. You know, you can still find him on you know, probably on some broadcast on some UHF channel. You can find him.
You cannot beat the Lawrence Welk singers. What were they called again? The men? There were women and there were men and they had different names. Okay. Lawrence Welk singers, whatever.
Yeah.
When they would try to do stuff like rock and roll, it was hilarious.
Yeah, that was the best.
I'm getting bugged riding up and down the same old strip. Like, really?
It was a great SNL skit. Ray Charles was the musical guest. And they Dan Aykroyd, Gilda Radner, I mean, this was a long time ago, came
Gilda
into the
Radner.
Studio to record a Ray Charles tune as the Swinging Caucasians.
See,
Dan Aykroyd
go.
Goes, you know, I hear, Mr. Charles, that your ma and pa are from Arkansas, and my ma's from Arkansas, too. I wonder if they know each other.
Yeah, probably not.
That's great stuff.
We have Tyre Carver on the phone.
Tyre Carver. What's happening, man?
Hey-ho.
What's the latest?
Not much. You finally going to start sleeping in the morning?
No. I'm there till December 23rd. It's 5.5 months away, so it's going to be a bit. And why they use the word retiring, I don't know, because I'm not retiring. I asked them not to use it, but they did anyway, so what are you going to do? And I usually get along with management so well.
Oh, yeah. I witnessed that over the years.
Mike is a... Well, I told the story that I almost didn't get hired in April of 86 because the owners at that time, who then found out they were going to sell to Disney, so they said, okay, go ahead and hire them. The owners, the McKenna brothers, were not going to hire me back because I worked for them in 82, and all I did was piss them off. So I almost didn't end up at KQ because of that. Yeah, such is life.
Disney was the best thing that ever happened to us.
Oh, you got that right, man. Whatever you needed, you got it. Yeah. And that's just how Disney was back in those days. Now they got the puke running it who's taking it down some road.
Well, that couldn't last.
No.
Well, that's true. The good times can't last.
Nothing
you're right
gold
about
can
that.
Stay.
But I still like going there with grandkids. Watching grandkids go in there. Andy, you aren't going to believe when you take Ethan to Disney World when he's 3-4 years old, two or three, actually. It's so cool to watch your own child be that excited.
Well, right now, when Daisy walks by him, he laughs so hard he can't breathe. So.
Yeah, well, there you go.
You know, it doesn't take a whole lot at this age.
No, that's very, very true. It's so wonderful that just to watch the little kids at Disney World, and they're just so enthralled with everything. No, sorry, Tyre, what do you got cooking this weekend, Buster Brown?
No, events with the ice cream truck as usual.
Oh, well, where's the event this week?
So, let's see. Tomorrow night's in Apple Valley. Saturday's Plymouth. And Monday, we've got two of them, one in Plymouth, one in, I think, Elk River.
Oh,
I'm
for
not sure.
4th of July. That's a good thing. That's a good deal.
Yep.
But yeah, we're going to work on getting this show syndicated with the family because I want to spend more time with my family, and well, you know, it's going to take a while to do that. But I got 5.5 months still left at KQRS, so we'll see how it works out, and then I'll go. You know, usually I'd say I'm going to bed, but I think I'll retire. What do you think? What else is happening?
Yeah, they use that word real.
They use what?
They use that word really nicely. It's like, it's not retiring.
I know. I just, and I asked him not to do it, but apparently nobody got the word. I just, whatever. I've gotten to a point in my life, I go, why don't you just be you? You know what I mean? Whatever. Correct?
Yeah.
All right, Pally. We'll have a good day,
exactly.
Tyre. Don't work too hard this weekend.
You too. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Tyre Carver, ladies and gentlemen. No doubt about it. So, what else?
We have Joe on the phone as well.
Jose Cuervo?
Yes.
Joe, what's the latest?
Oh.
Joe just hung up, so never mind.
I think something went wrong when Tyre hung up.
That'll all work out.
It's a merged call. Joe, call back.
So, honest to God, Michael Bryan, what the hell are you doing? Were you having a malfunction or something?
What do you mean?
I've never seen you sit in a chair and be quiet for an hour.
I have absolutely zero to say about the Beach Boys.
Yeah, you don't like the Beach Boys?
Not that I don't like them. I just have...
Rhode Island?
Yeah, I might as well be talking about, you know, quantum physics as
didn't
far
you,
as I'm concerned.
Didn't you ever get bugged riding up and down the same old strip?
Nope.
We have Joe.
Joe is there. Okay, Joe, how you doing?
Good, how are you doing?
Magnificent. I'm having a ball.
I decided to give it up, huh?
Yes, except for I'm not giving it up. It's just
are you retiring?
Oh, God, why me? Why?
It's about time you quit.
Yeah, it's about time I quit. That's exactly right.
Man of your age, you need to rest.
I never said the word retire.
You know what's amazing, though? I got to be the only dumb son of a bitch that's leaving a job, and I still got another 6 months to put in before I can leave.
So it's usually 6 weeks.
Will you and the missus be, taking a long cruise?
I mean, you mean after I retire?
Yeah, after you retire, yeah.
Yeah, probably. I'll be about 92.5 at that point. No, yeah, we'll see. No, it's just, I get home and I walked in, because between the shows I went home for a short bit, and I walk in and Catherine looks at me and she goes, didn't do it again, huh? And I said, nope. That's just how life goes. But like I said, have I ever gotten along with management anywhere I've ever worked? And the answer would be no. I just don't get along with those guys.
Well, that's one reason the show was a success.
Well, that's true.
You need people who, a truly entertaining radio show, you need someone who pisses off somebody.
That's very true. And I piss off a lot of people.
And the thing is, you know, if you're an authoritarian type, you're going to fail in radio.
Oh, there's no question. No, you're right. You're absolutely right about that.
Or you're going to wind up on The Old Neighbor.
The Neighbor, baby. Yeah. How's the neighbor doing?
Who knows?
He goes, How long did The Neighbor last? They lasted like 35 years, something like that, didn't they?
They had a good run, yeah.
They had a pretty good 35, 36 years, about the same period. So, then I called them and said, are you retiring? And they said, leave me alone. But are they? Now, Roger's no longer with us, correct?
Yeah, Roger died, I believe. So, but,
oh, my God. Are you giving me the finger?
Wrong one.
Ryan, how are you?
Come on in. Absolutely. We only got about 4 minutes left in this segment, so there's plenty. Oh, 5 minutes we got left in this segment.
Good to see you.
Good to see you.
Nice of you to comb your hair this time you came in.
Wow.
Now it looked
a
good.
Rough night?
No, you did not have a rough day. You were fine. So how have you been, Pally?
Packed.
You can put on headphones. That's right. Fine.
Jam-packed.
We're good to go. Action. You're jam-packed with what?
Just campaigning.
I'm going to vote for you. Why don't you put those on the right way?
And for people who can't see us, Ryan Winkler just walked in. That's who's being attacked.
He's being attacked. like there's no tomorrow. Honest to God, I'm telling you, I am really glad that Pat's not here yet, because the four of you going after him at once ought to be.
I'm leaving because I was just.
No, I'm talking about a guy who will come in now.
So
That would be phenomenal.
And Pat can't have worse posts on his signs than Mr. Winkler does.
What?
Where did you get those posts on these signs?
What are you talking about?
The yard signs right now.
Is there something wrong with them?
Oh, my God. They're like made out of spaghetti.
What?
Oh, well.
They are very thin.
All right. We've got better ones coming.
Yeah.
Well, we've got better ones coming.
I replaced it with what I had, so we already got it fixed.
But all right.
Those are very, very thin, whatever they use.
What are they? What are you talking about?
Yard signs.
So for your campaign.
Posts, yeah. The posts you put in the yard signs?
Yeah.
They weren't. I don't know what kind of
alloy
was used for that.
They're probably veterans of a lot of campaigns.
Yeah, yeah. A yard sign that goes up in June needs to stay up longer than maybe 24 hours.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea.
You didn't buy them from China, did you?
I don't know. So
China. Yeah, there you go. Honestly, you know, I haven't seen you in a few months now. I thought it's been longer than that, I think, but. I honest to God, I can't remember who the hell it was, but I was talking to somebody, and your name came up. And I said, oh, yeah, Ryan's a friend of mine. He goes, oh, he's not. And I'm like, well, I thought oh,
okay.
I was. Pardon me. I thought you and I were buddies, but apparently. No, I don't know why. People get weird about that stuff. You notice it. Now, what do you...
Yeah, well, there are a lot of weird people.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
You think?
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's no doubt of it. They're getting weirder by the day, too, believe me. Some of the things I see going on now, it's like, are you pulling my tit here with this one? Or it's just pretty amazing. We need to take a break here because Pat Garoppolo will be here any second now. And then you're going to... So that was it? We get to see you for an hour and you're
that's
just...
All that's all I was here for, was for an hour. So I can sit here and listen to Beejoys.
Oh, my God.
For all the people who love it, you just continue to
so
love
you don't
it.
Like the beat, you don't like the Beejoys?
I just have no interest in them. They're just not
wonder
my
why.
Deal, so... I just don't.
Not everyone here is a politician.
Mike's into
New York. Yeah, that's true.
Mm. Mike's into New York rap, East Coast.
God,
that's his
God,
thing.
God, I hate that rap so much. I can't. Oh, God, I hate that music. And the auto-tune's even worse.
That's awful.
I hate that stuff so much. And would somebody tell Megan that Megan can't be a stallion?
Yeah, I know. It just bothers me every time.
Every time, Mike. I'm here to tell you. All right, we have to take a break. Michael Bryant is going to go. You're out?
See ya.
All right, Pally. I'll talk to you over the weekend.
Happy 4th.
No, you're going on vacation. So
well, I'll talk to you Tuesday.
Go enjoy your vacation.
I don't know about vacation.
Call me back when you get back. You've been trying to call me, and I have been busy. And
you
so
always are.
You just call me when you're done here. Give me
right.
a call. Okay.
Right.
And
why are you picking your nose while you're talking?
I'm picking my nose.
Oh, I thought
I was
he was.
Trying to think what else I had to say.
Wasn't a pick, it was
plus,
a scratch.
There's a couple other things that I can't truly talk about. You know, I mean,
is it good stuff?
Well,
or?
No, the stuff with your contract. There's things that you get into that I just can't. It's not the easiest for me to say over the air.
Like what?
Well, just generally.
Go after yourself, that kind of thing?
No.
That's not it?
No.
Is this the Learjet or the harassment charges?
We could have dealt with that. So.
Yeah, but I asked them not to do it, so I thought they wouldn't do it.
Because they've always done what you asked.
Okay, goodbye. I'll talk to you later.
We'll see you later.
All right, thanks a lot.
All right, thanks, Mike.
He's having none of it. I think that's hilarious.
And say happy birthday before
you die. I will.
There you go.
And it is always the 4th, right?
Every year.
Yeah, every year it's on the 4th. Is that on the 4th?
It is on the 4th.
The 4th is on the 4th, isn't it?
Talking about
who asked
my
you that
wife's
again?
Birthday is on the 4th of July, and she was at a family reunion in Rockford, Illinois, ran into a distant cousin who was, I think, stoned out of his mind and said the following, well, it's cool. Is your birthday on the 4th every year?
Well,
yeah.
Is it?
Yes.
That's so funny to watch. Michael Bryant gets so frustrated being my attorney.
Well, who could blame him?
What?
I wouldn't want that job.
What are you talking about?
I'm running for it.
Well, you know, considering the history there.
Of what?
Well, I'm just saying being your attorney is not always a plus.
What do you mean?
Well, I just mean that the previous attorneys have, come to a just an uncomfortable end. You know what I'm saying?
Because they stole money?
Well, I know. I don't know. I wasn't saying that.
Oh, my God. Look at those bad boys. Perry Mason,
trust
baby.
Trust me, I'm a lawyer.
Trust me, I'm a lawyer. All right, we got to take a break. We'll be right back. Ryan Winkler's here. Pat Garofalo's going to be here any second now. Mike Gelfand, of course. What's your name again?
Doug Sprinthal, and we'll be right back. I'm going to call Pat and see where he is.
Backstab. Is that what you're doing?
Changing the name of the podcast to Doug and the Quitter. We'll be right back.
There you go.